Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Julian Temple's 1988 film, Earth Girls Are Easy. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
From my experience, Earth Girls aren't that easy, so I don't know what this movie was trying to say.
Maybe
they were just talking about Valley Girls, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Or Gina Davis in particular, I'm not really sure. So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler,
but
normally...
That would mean it would be called Earth Girl Is Easy.
That is true, if they were just specifically referring to...
So I think you're wrong there, Ben.
Thank you for pointing that out. speaking of pointing things out, we should also let people know that this is a little bit of an unconventional episode of this podcast. We are recording this right now on Monday night, which is a mere one day after the previous
awesome producers episode.
Yes.
So, check it out right now.
You and I
think
decided...
this is dropping in 7 days, right? Like
yeah,
7 days from today?
This will come out, sometime in the realm of May 5th to 7th or something like that. So,
happy Cinco de Mayo, Ben.
Yeah, happy Cinco de Mayo to you. So, basically the reason we're doing this is I'm not going to be in town. I'm going to be back in Florida for my girlfriend's graduation, just, you know, scheduling conflicts, whatever. So Tyler and I decided to do kind of a mystery box movie. We did not announce that we're going to be watching Earth Girls.
Not just new movies. Monday night mystery movie.
Yeah. So we just kind of figured, hey, let's watch this movie. And for the, we're not going to do the character name game this week because it would be the same as the one that we just did yesterday, because the same, you know, same movies just came.
Sergeant Jericho Butler.
Yes, indeed.
So far, spoiler.
And
wait, you're coming to Florida? You did not tell me that.
I am coming to Florida just briefly for a few days. So
enough to do a podcast, I would assume.
No, I don't think I'm gonna have enough time, which is why we're doing this episode right now on a Monday night. So anyway, we will not be doing the character name game for the media consume section, which is the part of the show that we normally talk about what we've been watching and any sort of cool events we've been to and concerts and books and things like that. Tyler and I decided to talk about one movie a piece, and that is the movie that the other one talked about on the previous episode. So last episode for you guys, yesterday, I spoke about a movie called Bare Knuckles, and Tyler talked about Fire and Ice. So we're going to each discuss those movies because we watched the others, upon their recommendation. So let's go ahead and
film flashback or something. I don't know.
What's that?
Like something flashback will be this part of the show because we refer back to a previous episode so many times.
Yeah.
Film flashback, maybe? I don't know.
Well, yeah, we'll work on that. We'll come up with something.
We'll never do this again. It doesn't matter.
Okay, so Tyler, let's go ahead and kick off that media consume section. Let's start with you. I'm not going to ask you what you've been watching because I know that it's Bare Knuckles. What did you think
about
Bare Knuckles?
Yeah, just finished it up. I also call it Mr. Cotter the Movie, or Welcome Back Cotter the Movie. I don't know. The guy looked a lot like Mr. Cotter.
Okay.
Of Welcome Back Cotter fame.
I've never seen Welcome Back Cotter.
I don't know if you ever saw my Photoshop pun of Welcome Back Potter.
That was a Harry Potter one, I assume.
Have you ever at least seen that?
It probably glazed over my head because... Because I don't know what Welcome Back Cotter is.
Very well. Yeah, I mean, it was exactly how you described it. There was a lot of funk. I like that. But did you notice, because I was watching it like maybe at the halfway point, it turned into like almost like stop motion, or was that just Netflix?
Yes.
Like the frame rate just kind of went down, and so they were kind of like moving really weird.
Yeah,
disappeared.
I was going to wait and see if you pointed that out, because I wasn't sure if that was my Netflix, but now that you said that, that has to be like part of the actual movie. So what I think must have happened is they probably just ran out of money and started filming halfway through on a totally different type of film stock or something. They went from like 35 millimeter to 16 millimeter or something crazy like that.
I like the idea of them, like, the camera actually was messing up, and they didn't realize it till in post, and they're like, oh, crap. And, like, we can't refilm any of this.
But yeah, there's a lot of, like, yeah, a lot of, like, strobing and really weird stuff where it does kind of feel like there are a lot of frames missing from what a normal movie would be, so...
So that montage you were talking about was pretty awesome, but it happened right away, like, and... For some reason, they reference or they're alluding to the fact that he's a boxer and he's going to fight somebody, but then never does.
Right.
So he trains. He has like a Rocky montage, and then it never, other than kicking that guy's ass at the end, like it really doesn't help him at all. Like he's kind of like this underground citizen arrest guy who just basically kind of like a bounty hunter, except he does it on his own. Like nobody asks him to hunt bounties. Right. He's just got a bunch of wanted posters up in his apartment.
Yeah.
And then like scratch him out whenever he gets it done. Mm-hmm. But like my favorite scene was probably the Pizza Hut scene where he just picks up that girl in the parking lot. Like she's fighting with her boyfriend or whatever. And the boyfriend, like, I don't know, he tries to start beating her up and she gets out of the car and Cotter Kane, whatever, he, like, stands between the husband and the wife, and he's just like, no, get back in your car. Mm-hmm. And he's got his Pizza Hut takeout with him. And then he starts eating it on the hood of his car, and the woman's just kind of like, well, that was odd, and then walks away. Nothing happens. They're still just watching him eat pizza. And then she comes back, and,
yep.
And I'm just like, they always come back. Yes.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of the opening scene to Heat, the Burt Reynolds movie that we just watched.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I thought that too. But it was funny because she was like, all we need now is champagne and candles. And I'm like, it's Pizza Hut. You need Mountain Dew and the Rock of Fire explosion.
Yes. Yeah, I enjoyed that too. Like, the way that he wooed that woman was the easiest thing he ever did in his life, basically. Like... She could have been the title character in Earth Girls Are Easy, but
nice.
So
yeah, and then like the killer Richard something, he was, you know, very weird. I mean, yep. Like you know, your general run of the mill, but I just liked how it was like the scene where back to the montage where he's running in like flares and along like, turtleneck. I thought that was funny. I mean. Did you say it was a blaxploitation film?
That's what it said in the Wikipedia page. I would have just called it like a, you know, kind of just like a 70s exploitation movie.
I just called it like a fightsploitation because I usually would think blaxploitation, like everybody in the cast is African American. Like there are no white, unless they're antagonists. I don't think there are any white people in black exploitation movies.
Well, I think there's that might be a sweeping generalization on your part, but I get your drift.
Damn piece.
And I think the character, his sidekick, who was named Black in Bare Knuckles, maybe was just enough to qualify it, you know, as far as like categorizing it in that genre. I think the differences between blaxploitation and just regular exploitation movies are always kind of a little murky anyway, so it probably could go either way.
Because is Blackula in a blaxploitation movie?
Yes.
Notice?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Superfly, I believe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shaft.
Shaft. Foxy Brown.
Yeah, and even like Black Dynamite. I mean, that's like a modern one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We need to do that one because that's another one I really want to check out. We should do that for an episode.
Yeah. I think they're talking about doing like a Black Dynamite 2 now, actually.
Black Dynamite with Superfly.
Okay.
And then Enter the Dragon.
Wow. All right. That is ambitious.
Triple exploitation episode.
So speaking of ambitious, I wanted to ask you, what did you think about like the last 30 minutes or something where it's just this huge chase scene and just action scene after action scene?
Should have been the whole movie. I'm telling you, I would have sat for an hour and a half watching that stuff because, and I don't know what kind of car he had, But what's that? That isn't called the LA River, which yes. isn't really a river,
yep.
where like Terminator was filmed and stuff. Mm-hmm. It takes place towards there. But then, like, the whole chase scene was pretty cool because it was set to pretty awesome music. But then he stops, like, they crash in mm-hmm. the LA River, the concrete river. And his car, the front part of his car explodes.
Yes.
And the first thing I say is, "Buy American." And then as he's walking away, the other part of the car explodes.
Yes.
I'm like, jeebus.
That is one of my favorite car explosions on film, by the way, because the first part looks so pathetic, really. Like, you know.
Yeah, he like flips over.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, so you're talking about the LA River, and just for people who might not know, that's like where Terminator 2 is filmed, as you mentioned. It's also where like the Greased Lightning race goes down at the end of Grease, the movie with John Travolta.
Yeah, it's not a real river. It's just like a water retention.
Yeah, it's a giant, like, I think the Italian Job also had, like, a chase sequence at the very end going through there, too. So they've got concrete pieces that are kind of slanting up toward the regular ground level, but then these concrete things slide down into just a huge trough, basically, of cement that just runs throughout the city. So Zachary Kane, or Mr. Cotter, or whatever you want to call him, is like riding up on the side chasing the bad guy on a motorcycle, and the bad guy like jukes him out, or like, oh, he gets caught in some water or something and crashes.
Yeah.
And then Zachary Kane's car, because it's up on the side, which you would think as a normal person, like, oh, I probably shouldn't do this because cars weigh thousands of pounds. It just flips over.
I'm at a straight up 90 degree angle.
It rolls over, and he like kicks the door out and and like kind of like hobbles away, and then the front of his car explodes, which is like really pathetic in the grand, you know, in the shot, in the frame itself. And he jumps forward and like falls on the ground and gets up, and then the rest of the car explodes after that. Like, they set it up really well where you think that's all that's coming, and
right.
then the real explosion happens.
And usually a car explodes because the gas tank explodes. That thing had like 6 gas tanks.
Right, yeah.
Like, it was just 6 gas tanks lining the side of the car.
Yeah.
And then it got really pathetic because the music stopped and he started just kind of chasing this guy up the other side of the ramp, like,
mm-hmm.
creates like a little divot, and so he's going up the other side, and this guy's like, they're not going very fast because it's so steep.
Yeah,
so they're like trudging up the ramp, and the guy starts trying to climb the fence, and then he kicks Cotter like back down the ramp, and he slowly starts to roll, and then he like flings himself even faster down the ramp. I'm like, dude, just hold on for a second. Like, his legs actually propel him into greater tumbles.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're an idiot. And then he basically trudges back up, and they have a showdown on the bridge, which was pretty ridiculous and awesome because he falls off one side of the bridge and then comes up on the other side, which is a pretty suspenseful last couple minutes. And,
yes.
then it's over. And he was really pissed at the end of it.
He was suspended, and it was a suspenseful sequence, yes.
Yeah, and did you see how pissed he was during the credits? He was just tossing trash.
Yeah, he like picked something up and hurled it.
Yeah, he could not handle his anger.
Okay, so I'd want to address something briefly about this movie. If you guys are like Tyler and I and you like watching terrible movies, I want to recommend that you watch Bare Knuckles. It's got some pretty great action stuff, and it's really not that long. It's probably worth your time if you know what you're getting yourself into.
I'm thinking about starting a sister podcast that's just exploitation movies.
Wow, that would be interesting. I would love to be a guest on that one time. So.
Not really. That's too much work.
Just once, though. Just one time I want to be a guest. That's it.
Oh, just one episode?
Yes.
And you on it? Okay.
Better make it good. So I want to say, let's get into just a spoiling a pretty key point that happens in Bare Knuckles, because I want to know what your reaction is to this. So if you guys are going to watch this movie, fast forward just like a minute or something, because we're not going to talk about this for a long time. So spoilers for Bare Knuckles. Bare Knuckles coming up right now. Okay, so what did you think about the fact that they killed off the girl?
That happens.
It happens? It almost
that
never
happens. In those movies. I mean, you need something to drive the character to finish his quest, man.
I understand, but I think
He was too weak, and he needed that extra oomph to get the guy.
But rarely,
I don't think he would have beat him had he not had that anger behind him because the girl died.
I totally agree, but I think I'm just saying as far as like, and I like that it happened for this particular story because I think it does work. But I just mean like in general, that's a pretty ballsy move because this character, female character, I'm blanking on her name right now, but she.
Jennifer,
yeah, she's in the movie for a good amount of time, and this death comes like pretty close to the end, like right before this action sequence we were just talking about. So it kind of shocked me because typically once movies introduce characters like that and they stick around for the whole length of the movie, you know that they're going to be okay by the end. You know, it's going to be a pretty typical kind of wrap up this package and, you know, tie a nice bow on it or whatever. But they chose to go a pretty dark route with it or route with it or whatever.
That's what's so great about exploitation movies. They ball slap you at the end.
I guess they do.
Oh, you think you're in a safe place now? Bam!
Yep.
No, Mr. Cotter, man, he's there's definitely a sequel to be had here if it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So look forward to that, hopefully.
All right. So that is Bare Knuckles. I watched Fire and Ice, which, as you mentioned, was directed by Ralph Bakshi, based on the art of Frank Frazetta, which is really cool. I was doing some Google imaging of that guy's stuff.
He's done like a lot of fantasy stuff. Like I think he did like a lot of covers for, I don't know, like computer games maybe.
Heavy metal albums, maybe too.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. But like, what was interesting? Did you notice who was doing the backgrounds in that movie?
I saw that it said Thomas Kincaid.
Yeah, I think it's the same.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Recently passed away this year. I think the guy that I have his paintings on my checks.
Well, there you go.
Look at a.
The backgrounds in this movie kind of stuck out to me because. A lot of times in movies like this, or just in general animated movies, they'll have like a pretty solid background, but then like an animal or something in the foreground, and like as a character walks by, like the animal will turn its head and just look at it or something. You know, just you know what the type of scene I'm talking about. This happens in like every Looney Tunes episode ever.
Like a matting background, and then you have animation.
Yeah, In Fire and Ice, they had just like the kind of matte background, but they were animals drawn on them that didn't move, which I thought was kind of strange. Like there was a snake at one point, there was a lizard that I'm thinking of, like an iguana looking creature too. And I was like, that's a weird choice. But overall, I think the look of this movie is actually really cool. I'm really, really excited to see what Robert Rodriguez does with it now, having seen...
You're just excited about Tigra.
Dude, Tigra.
You got sprung.
So ridiculous with that woman. Jeez. I mean, for people who are like obsessed with animated, like anybody who ever thought Princess Jasmine was hot or something growing up, like watch this movie because it is ridiculous.
Wait,
like,
who thought Princess Jasmine was hot?
Guilty.
Oh, God.
Anyway, you know what I'm saying? Like, this whole movie is like an excuse for a bunch of creepy, pervy guys to like sit in a room and just draw this almost naked
woman. Or podcast about it.
What?
Or podcast about it.
I guess that's true. We are almost no better, or just straight up no better than the men who drew this movie.
True.
It is.
Yeah, it's intense, man. I think I like it. I mean, I don't know if you're as big a fan of sword and sorcery stuff as I'm kinda am.
Mm-hmm.
Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer. I mean, it's got a lot of those very basic themes to it, where it's like princess kidnapped, dark wizard. Hero has to come in and basically F some S up.
Yeah.
And save woman.
It has a little bit of similarities to something like Excalibur, I think, too. Which we watched like on one of the, I think, episode 4 or something of this podcast. So,
but I think it's the animation that really puts it on the bar as far as a movie. I mean, if this was live action, I think it would have been at least probably not as well received.
Yeah.
But with animation, you're just kind of like, well, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know how well received the movie actually was, but I agree. I think the visuals are what kind of stood out back then and still stand out today. I mean, it's something that kind of Definitely has some staying power, and I think maybe the reason for that is because of that rotoscoping that we were talking about in the previous episode, where they did shoot most of this movie in live action
yeah.
and just traced all of the stuff onto, you know, into animation afterwards. So I remember you saying that that it was kind of weird, like watching characters, like animated characters, move like that.
Right.
And I wasn't really sure what you were talking about, but after seeing this movie, I totally get what you mean, because it's like almost like a motion capture type of thing.
Yeah, because it's so like you're seeing an unnatural thing move naturally, and your brain's
yeah.
kind of like, well, this doesn't match up.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of taken in by it, I think.
Yeah.
So, the movie actually, I think, lost money. I was doing research today, and it was like $1.2 million to make, and then it only made like maybe $700,000.
Wow.
Yeah, so somebody didn't get paid.
Yeah, that sucks.
Probably Franzetti. Maybe Thomas Kincaid. That's why he had to start doing like portraits and stuff. And
yeah, maybe that was – maybe Fire and Ice was the defining moment in his career.
Well, this isn't going to work out. Might as well do the gallery scene.
Yeah. But I think for people who are into that kind of sword and sorcery stuff, anybody who likes fantasy types of movies, and like, there's a lot of stuff in here that I feel like James Cameron took and kind of tossed into the Avatar world of, like, you know, the guy riding on the back of a giant pterodactyl and dinosaurs and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of like really kind of pulp stuff going on in this movie that. You know,
I just like Necron's character. I like the idea of just somebody just rolling in whenever they want, and they're like, yeah, bow down to me. What are you going to do? Like, I'm going to own you. And
Necron
so,
was such a bitch, though, because he has these ice powers, and
right.
he challenges people to fight him, like, in single combat, one-on-one, but he never fights them fairly. He always uses his ice powers to, like, force-choke them. But like
that's why Necron's my boy.
I mean, he is a bad guy, but I mean, like, I feel like a more badass character would have like put his powers aside and like fought him mano a mano. But whatever.
Well, that's the honorable way.
Yeah.
This character is clearly dishonorable. Yeah, but I just liked how every time he had to use his powers, he had to like clench his entire body just to force something out, like constipation set.
Yeah.
What channels his magic powers.
Because of how intense his body language was when he was doing that stuff, I kept thinking that a big plot point was going to be that he was tiring himself out by using all of his, you know, concentration for these ice powers, and then people were going to be able to kind of swoop in and take care of him when he was exhausted or drained or whatever. But that just never comes into play.
Yeah.
He just always clenches his full body. It's really weird.
I like the beginning where they kind of explained everything, and they're like, oh yeah, the mom was basically pure evil, had a son. The son just owns everybody, and then like she's basically powerless at the end of the film, and I'm just kind of like, oh, the mom's supposed to be like this. Like, I thought the mom was going to be this kind of supreme entity that they were going to have to take on in like another movie, maybe.
Yeah.
But I guess everything. But the ending, spoiler, really kind of put things aside for me, because it gave the impression that they were the only two people left in this world.
What?
Because the king, yeah, because the king like pulled the lava lever, and I'm not a geologist or anything or a volcanologist, but I'm pretty sure lava destroyed everything. And I know they showed the castle at the very end, but I thought everyone had died and they were the only ones left.
Yeah, I mean,
because remember she was like, we have to start over. I'm like, what, Adam and Eve style? Are they Adam and Eve? Is this where our Earth began?
I mean, I think that's like the metaphor that they're going for, and they do that pretty well. But I also don't think that it's a literal that they're the
How
only
people
two
people you think were in that castle. Like three people maybe, and then everyone else who was just kind of in the world like got lava'd.
I mean, it was basically like Helm's Deep style, you know, like castle built into the side of a mountain or something. So. They did show a shot when they pulled the lava lever, as you refer to it.
Right.
That
what else
they,
are you going to call it, seriously?
No, that's it. Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah. So when they pulled that lever, they did show, like, where the lava kind of erupted from, and there's, like, these gargoyle-looking things that are kind of built in. It's like a, it was like an emergency system, I think, that they had installed in the beginning.
Right.
And not that that's ever covered in the actual movie, but, like, pre, you know, before
here's the...
the
schematics for the lava plumbing we have right underneath the castle here. We better have a narrator explain this to the audience.
But I think they designed it so the lava flow would just kill every, like, all the living plants and animals and stuff in the surrounding area and leave the city constructed and everybody safe. So, I don't know.
You know what, another freaky part was that skeleton that came back to life mm-hmm. when he... witch's house. That was really weird too.
Yeah, it took me a second to realize that that was the actual witch, the one who had just been killed. But
well, there were only two people in that hut.
Yeah,
it was either her or the other guy.
Well, I thought it could.
But it was just kind of bizarre looking, like the way the skeleton just kind of got up and was like, "Hey."
Yeah, it reminded me of the smoke smog monster in Fern Gully, if you remember
okay.
that
yes,
movie
that
at all.
Out.
Weird like skeleton type thing, but yeah, anyway, so yeah, Fire and Ice, you know, good stuff if you're into like the fantasy type of thing. Everybody else, like if none of the stuff that we've said sounds interesting, then you're definitely not gonna like this movie at all. So
yeah, I think I'm gonna start a sister podcast that only features sword and sorcery movies.
Okay, I'll be a guest multiple times on that one.
Not gonna happen.
All right, so with that, let's go ahead and move on into our review of Earth Girls Are Easy.
A UFO landed in my pool. They captured me. I fed them hot twice, but you've got to cut their hair.
What did you say? So, they can still be dates.
I think we could just make them look more sort of human.
Hey, come on, everybody. We're doing a makeover.
Wow, you're incredible.
I can fix you up with some verdacious chips, just like that.
I can't believe you're printing an alien in front of all these people.
I'm going home with him.
Are we limp and hard to manage?
Wait a minute, are you, like, coming on to me?
All right, so Earth Girls Are Easy came out in 1988. This is a musical, which I did not know before we decided to watch it. A comedy directed by Julian Temple. And it stars Gina Davis, Jeff Goldblum, Michael McKean, Jim Carrey, and Damon Wayans. Tyler, your thoughts on Earth Girls Are Easy?
Yeah, I did not think it was a musical. I probably still would have suggested it had I known. I don't know. I think just watching Jim Carrey and all these people in, you know, kind of before their prime, I would think. I don't know Gina Davis, but yeah, it was. I don't want to. I mean, I guess I could call it a fun movie. People say that a lot because they go, "Oh, it was a fun movie," and it usually means, "Well, it wasn't that good, but I didn't hate it."
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to say that because I didn't hate it, but it wasn't necessarily good.
Right.
But it was kind of like, I think it's one of these movies, and I like movies like that that actually say, "Hey, you know what? Well, let's just goof off in this film. Like, the script is ridiculous, the songs are ridiculous." I can just see these people kind of spending, I don't know, however long it takes to make a movie like this, like a month and a half, let's say 6 months, filming in California, probably where they live. And so they wake up every morning and they're like, you know what? I'm going to dress up like a furry alien today and make out with Gina Davis. Like, I have chosen the correct career here. Of course, channeling Jeff Goldblum there.
Right. Yeah.
But,
I had forgotten.
Yeah, I didn't have high hopes for it. I mean, I want to say it's a fun movie, but I actually want to say that it was a kind of a niche movie. It was very quirky, I'll say.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's definitely like a cult classic in every sense of the word, every sense of the phrase, I guess, because it's really off the wall. And I don't even know, Tyler, I don't even know if I liked this movie, really. There's enough in it
that... doesn't look like it's barking up your alley.
Well, there's enough in it that made me, like, hate it, with the musical numbers in particular. I mean, we just talked about the producers, and that has, a pretty awesome musical number with Springtime for Hitler in it. I'm a fan in general of good music in movies, especially in musicals. Like, I know some people... former Not Just New Movies podcast co-host Pat refuses to watch musicals in general.
That's a general consensus there.
I am not one of those people.
I don't sign up to watch musicals.
Okay, I'm just saying I have enjoyed many a musical in the past. I like,
We all enjoy musicals. Are you a big fan of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers?
I actually haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, that's a good one. There's a podcast episode right there.
Yeah. So anyway, point being,
Phantom of the Opera.
The point being, yeah. I'm not opposed to musicals in general, but the musical numbers in this are just grating and really kind of, I don't know, they rub me the wrong way.
I think they're intended to do that.
But I think you're right. I think there's, you know, there's an element to this movie that, like, let's do things. I mean, it did take place in, or was filmed in 1988. So I think it's fair to say that the kind of general scope of comedy was a little bit different back then. But I think there is something to this movie that is done, like, so far off the beaten path that they did it on purpose that way, for that they kind of said, like, you know what, if people don't get what we're doing here, then F them, this movie isn't for them.
True.
You know what I mean? Like, it kind
of, there's a lot of things that somebody probably would have talked bad about.
Yeah.
And in this movie, because it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. There's a lot of it that really doesn't even come close to making sense, but
I think maybe 65% are inside jokes, like among the writers, they won't get this, whatever. We think it's funny.
So, I mean,
and a lot of that, and like a lot of comedy is like that, which is kind of funny because, I mean, we're 1988, like 24 years out of the Zeitgeist. What's that word? Zeitgeist?
Zeitgeist, yeah.
And, like, if you watch, like, Saturday Night Live, like, 30 years ago, like, there are probably certain inside jokes that we wouldn't get today. Mm-hmm. But then you watch Saturday Night Live, like, currently, and it's, you know, most of those skits are really weird, too. But I think they're funny because they're just so outrageous and so ridiculous. And it's probably an inside joke among the writers, but I think comedy writers are sometimes, you know, you have comedy writers that want to make money, and then you have comedy writers who actually, you know, they think their script is funny, but nobody else may think it's funny, but they still push along with it because, you know, your idea of comedy is different because it's everybody's different.
Yes.
And so this is, it's a niche audience because you really have to kind of latch on for the long haul to kind of have fun with it or enjoy it at least.
Yeah. And I mean,
Go ahead.
Was what I did with this movie is, like, you know, I think you sent me a text that said something like two musical numbers in the first 10 minutes. This isn't a good sign or something like that. Or first 5 minutes or something. And I didn't want to say anything because I wanted just to get your genuine reaction when we're actually talking about this on the podcast, like we normally do. But, I didn't like it at all in the beginning, but I kind of warmed up to it. And then the end kind of took me out of it again. So I'm not going to say that I just didn't like the movie overall, but there were parts of it that I really enjoyed. I think the chemistry between Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis is really great. I mean, they were technically married at the time, so that kind of comes through.
Oh, wait, were they really married?
Yeah, for 3 years.
Goldblum, how do you skip out on that?
From 87 to 1990, they were married. They were married in right in the middle of this, in the middle of making this movie. I think Michael McKean's like surfer, pool cleaner guy was really over the top and stupid, but I thought he was funny just because he was so stupid.
He looks a lot like Jason Sudeikis now, which is pretty bizarre because they were both on Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
But Michael McKean in the 80s looks a lot like, or at least in this movie, looked like Jason Sudeikis.
So yeah.
You want me to give you a quick rundown of the plot, or go ahead and finish your thought?
Well, yeah, I was just also going to say that I really enjoyed Jim Carrey and Damon Wayans. Like, I mean, it's clear why they hired those guys to play aliens. I mean, it's the whole like Robin Williams and Mork and Mindy thing. Like those guys basically, I mean, that is their style of comedy, is like really broad, like, facial manipulation, like, imitation, like slapsticky type of stuff, and when they're packaged in this alien body or whatever, or alien mindset mentality, it works really well. So yeah, go ahead with the rundown of the plot.
And plus, it was preliminary work for Jim Carrey as the Grinch.
Oh yeah,
the hairy bodysuit.
Yeah.
And I think Jim Carrey and possibly Damon Wayans appeared on In Living Color from time to time.
Yeah, they did.
But yeah, so the plot of the movie is Gina Davis is living in the Valley, which I'm not really sure. Is that part of Los Angeles? I
don't know. Yeah, it's like
that's what life is like in LA.
It's not it's close to Hollywood and all that stuff, but it's separated.
It an actual valley?
It is, yeah. It's separated by kind of a mountain pass or whatever, so that it is called the Valley, and it is technically a valley, yes.
Right. I want to see Valley Girl now. I've saw it in the past, but apparently, like, I guess there's a certain attitude that goes along with people who live in the Valley.
Yeah, like, exemplified by the girls at the party and the club and stuff. But, yeah, go ahead.
So Gina Davis is planning to get married, and her husband doesn't want to bang her.
Or future husband, I guess.
Future husband, yeah. Fiance doesn't want to bang her. And so he's like, all right, well, we'll wait 5 days until we bang because I don't want to do it tonight. I got a headache. So he's pretty much on the DL. And she's supposed to go somewhere, and he brings back a girl, and then she kicks him out, and then aliens crash in their spaceship in her pool. And it's kind of weird because the spaceship is really small, and when you go into the spaceship, you're small. But when you come out, you're regular size.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, that's – you would think they would spend less time on the shrinking technology and more time on just building a bigger ship. That probably would have been more cost effective, but I digress. And so the aliens are like different colors. There's like a red one, a blue one, and a yellow one, and they're all really weird. And they act like they've never been space travelers before, or they've never landed on another planet because they go completely apeshit when they get here. And they start like eating things and like doing just everything possible. And I'm like, you're space travelers. Like, you should know, like, what to do if you land on a planet because you're traveling around in a rocket ship. Like, there should be some type of protocol.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
there should be some
type
sort
of diplomatic list or a speech or something. And none of that is addressed. So she takes them to her.
You seem genuinely upset that none of that is addressed.
So she takes them to the nail salon because she doesn't have any nair. And, her friend, who's pretty hot, who I think is one of the writers of the movie.
Yes, and she also did the music.
Julie Brown, I think is her name?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay.
And she shaves them all down, and so they turn into Damon Wayans, Jim Carrey, and Jeff Goldblum, which is kind of funny because Jeff Goldblum's like the hunk among the three.
Yep.
Which is kind of funny because today, I don't know who the hunk would be now. I guess maybe Damon Wayans still. Oh, I lost my train of thought here. Okay, so anyway. So they go out and they basically party like 80s style. Like there's no responsibilities for anybody. Like no one has to go to work. And they're just like, oh, it's Saturday night. We got to take these guys out. Like who cares about
the fact that they're aliens or that, you know, the government is probably going to be after them or any sort of consequences ever.
Right.
Yeah, they don't care about it.
Learn how to dance, and then there's this really sweet scene where Damon Wayans goes up against, like, Billy Ocean, whoever that was, in a dance-off, and this guy's like wearing, like, a zoot suit, and he just gets owned. Like, he gets so pissed at the end of it because his dancers just do not hold up. And then Gina Davis bangs Jeff Goldblum.
Hang on. Before we get to that, I don't want to brush over that dance-off because I want to really harp on that and tell people that – if there is a reason to watch this movie, it is this dance-off sequence. It is fantastic. Like, if I'm ever going to compile a list for any of the websites that I write for of, like, the best dance-off scenes in movies, this one is going to be really close to the top, if not number one. It's really phenomenal.
The trash talk is just so ridiculous. Like, this guy, Billy Ocean, I don't know what his name is. He looks like Billy Ocean, I think. I think I'm thinking of the right musician here.
I think you're thinking of...
Get into my car.
What's the guy who sang? Who's the guy who sang Mambo Number 5?
Lou Bega?
Lou Bega, yeah, he kind of looked like Lou Bega.
Although I heard that on the radio today. A little bit of Jessica in my life, I'm telling you. But yeah, like he's talking about zero to hero, and like they just keep saying that over and over again.
Yeah.
And just kind of the. I really hope like it was Damon Wayans doing those moves because it was pretty good. I liked it.
Yeah. So,
dance.
So yeah, you mentioned
they have
that
really long tongues too, which never addressed again, but of course, like, sexually it's addressed because all the girls are like, he's coming home with me.
Yep.
It's like, oh, okay, because Earth girls are easy. I get it.
Yeah.
And so and so they finally get back, and Jeff Goldblum, like, immediately knows how to speak English, or, like, mm-hmm. very, very broken English. And he is just macking on Gina Davis, like, hardcore. Like, the other two, like, Damon Wayans and Jim Carrey are, like, almost like children where they don't really care. Like,
yeah.
I guess about, like, basic desires. But Jeff Goldblum has his sights on Gina Davis.
Yep.
And they end up getting it on, which is odd because Gina Davis may not have seen The Fly yet.
Yes.
I like the idea of movies having movies from the real world in them.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, what was The Fly, like, 87?
It must have. I'll look it up, but go ahead.
But, like, I like the idea of her having seen The Fly.
The Fly was 86.
Yeah, but seeing them on, like, not making the connection that she is Gina Davis and he's Jeff Goldblum and that they bang in The Fly and then she's pregnant with fly babies.
Right. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. That movie's gross. And so she does, but there's no repercussions there either. Like, yeah. This is just kind of a repercussion-free movie, which sometimes I think is for the best because, you know, in this Nolanized universe that we live in now where everything's got, like, an anti-hero repercussion-heavy film, it's nice to see a film that anything you do, there's nothing really going to go wrong.
Man, you love, trash-talking Chris Nolan.
He's ruined our cinematic landscape.
Wow.
Nah, I'm just kidding about that last part. Don't care for him, though. Don't care for him. I do like his brother, though, Jonathan Nolan. Huge fan.
That is so bizarre. You like the guy who writes the stuff, but not the director. Okay, so let's get
back
to Earth
Girls. You
know
what's wrong with Dark Knight, Ben? The direction.
Let's get back to Earth Girls Are Easy. The character that we haven't mentioned yet is Dr. Love, a.k.a. Ted, who is a giant douche. Actually, technically, you did mention him because you said that it was her fiancé. But this guy just doesn't learn his lesson at any point. He continuously macks on other women. And for some unknown reason, Gina Davis just keeps going back to him. Like, she's really hung up on this dude. And it's like, I get that he's a doctor and he's got money, but come on. Like, have some self-respect. What are you doing? Ultimately...
phrase, it's so derogatory.
Ultimately, she ends up with Jeff Goldblum because that's how this movie has to end, with them, you know, E.T. style, like, or I guess not E.T., maybe like Close Encounters style, jumping in a spaceship and flying away into the sunset or whatever. But
that was a bizarre ending, by the way. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah.
Yeah, he keeps coming back. Like, even like he comes back multiple times, like trying to get back with her, and he's still talking to that nurse. He's like, just because we're married doesn't mean we can't date. I'm like,
yeah. I mean, he's a despicable character, and she knows this. Like, he's wronged her, you know, to her face, and she still, like, considers. I have written down in my notes, she keeps going back to Ted, WTF. What is she doing? Like, I don't know why.
Dude, it's human nature to not like change.
I guess that, you know.
To stay the same.
Yeah. There is that. But I just thought it was like a really...
That's like Jerry Springer's on the air for the last 20 years.
Yeah, it's just kind of a terrible look at femininity. Or femininity.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, this is not a feminist movie. This is very... It's almost like caveman-esque.
Yeah.
The use of women in this film. Yeah. I don't want to say cave-woman-esque, but
right.
Very, very primitive gender roles here.
Yeah.
And alien roles, I guess.
So,
Gina Davis looking really good. Should have her on the podcast because we've discussed, I think, The Fly, which she was in.
Yep.
This Earth Girls Are Easy, which she was in. And I believe there was another movie we reviewed with her in it. And I'm trying to think of it.
It's been a while. I'm not entirely certain.
If you can come up with that third movie, audience members, please send us an email, notjustamovies@gmail.com.
Look through our own archives.
I know we've talked about a movie that she's in within the last 88 episodes.
There we go. There's a little
that narrows window. It down a little bit.
Yeah, window for people to search through. So there's a gas station hold up at one point with these guys, Jim Carrey and Marlon Wayans and Michael McKean just kind of like cruising around. They're driving the wrong way down a highway. There's a beach song and dance number. There's a lot of stuff in here that's like California heavy, and like you mentioned, that attitude of like the stupid like girls that they meet at the nightclub or whatever are just like, yeah, like totally, you know, like
made with a spoon. Ugh.
Yeah, they
so
have
grody.
And then I mean, maybe that's part of this movie's charm, is because it's so like kind of
yeah, it's almost like a Frankie Avalon movie, like those old beach beach movies where they would just like stand on the beach and dance, and it's like people went and saw those. So
yeah,
I think it's a kind of a throwback to stuff that, you know, just not used to.
It's definitely done tongue-in-cheek, I think. But you know, as much as we can talk about the humor in this movie being done tongue-in-cheek, and not to harp on this in particular, but I think, like, the depiction of women in particular and Valerie's character, or women and Valerie's character in particular, is really, like, there's not much that you can say about how she's, like, a strong character in any way. Like, a parody or not, reference or not to anything, like,
yeah,
it doesn't really come across that great. But
well,
anyway,
she's
that
very much like a teenager. Like, I know she's, like, a grown-ass woman, but it's very much like the characters, at least her and her friends, are very much like high schoolers, where they're very set in their ways, and they're like, you know, oh, Billy cheated on me, it's okay, we gotta go to prom or whatever.
Right.
You know, insert teen movie here. Like, it's as if, like, other than Dr. Douche, who's a doctor, like, none of the characters are really grown up. Like, they're not responsible adults at all. I mean, they're carousing around with aliens and and just saying the title of the movie in the movie.
Right.
It's always really bizarre.
Yeah, totally unprofessional.
That's something Christopher Nolan would do.
Yeah.
I'm the Dark Knight. Batman Begins now. Master Wayne, it's time to get up. The Dark Knight Rises. Ben, we just got news. That third movie was Beetlejuice with Gina Davis.
Oh, man. Okay.
Beetlejuice was that third movie.
There it is. And one more time, Beetlejuice. And he is...
Oh, God!
He has appeared. Oh, God. I remember him right now.
He is asking me to do so many foul things in the afterworld.
All right.
To, like, kill a guy.
So, I mean, I think you and I have kind of given our general sentiments on this movie. Like, there are elements that I know I didn't like at all.
Yeah.
But, and I still don't know whether I would say overall, I could lean one way or the other, because I think the elements that I didn't like, some of the character stuff, some of the, like, utter stupidity of the plot that wasn't, like, funny to me, and some of just, like, the kind of overall cheapness to it, and the feel that I wasn't always in on the joke of the cult classic part of it, didn't necessarily appeal to me. But I think the performances are really interesting. The alien stuff is pretty funny with Jim Carrey and those guys. You know, like, I feel like if you're fans of their work, you know, you'll find something to laugh at.
It's not unwatchable. But the Jeff Goldblum that we know and love today is not the Jeff Goldblum of this movie. He's very serious. He's, like, I don't think he becomes Jeff Goldblum, quote unquote, until, like, maybe Jurassic Park, where he's very, like, almost not ADD, but something like that, where he's very kind of twitchy. Like
Ticks and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is always kind of funny. And his very. And of course, he doesn't really have any major speaking roles because he doesn't know English.
Yeah.
He's very rhetorical sometimes when he, or oratorial.
Yeah, sure. Go for that.
In his roles. Yeah.
But
the ending is what I thought was kind of weird, because they're leaving. So she drains the pool. Like, the whole thing revolves around a day, because they have to drain the pool because that's where the spaceship is.
Yep.
And I love recounting the plot to this movie. And so the pool's finally drained, and they fix the spaceship, and they're going back home. And so she's like, okay, see you later, guys. I'm back with Ted.
Yes.
And so they're making out in the pool, the empty pool, while the spaceship's going away. And Jeff Goldblum's like, let me send my love wave. And he sends down his love wave. And, like, so they start, like, going at it. And then like Gina Davis and Ted, Dr. Douche.
Right.
And then all of a sudden she's like, hold up, Playa.
Yes.
I want to go with Jeff Goldblum. And then she like climbs out of the pool and he's like, and Dr. Douche just kind of starts making out with the cat. And she just jumps on the spaceship. And I'm like, why don't you guys just stay here? I mean, what's there to do? You guys had a lot of fun here. Why can't you just stay in the valley?
Yeah. And or at least stick like, around yeah, for a whatever. Little while.
Yeah, just for a little bit. I mean, you don't have your spaceship works. You don't have to leave. It's not like E.T. where the guys have to go home in like 5 minutes. Maybe they thought that there was going to be. I don't know. I like the idea that people always think there's going to be sequels, but I don't think they thought there was going to be a sequel. So they're like, forget it. They're going home.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's like the E.T. ride at Universal Studios where it's like. You don't know where E.T.'s whole planet is, but then you get there and you're like, this kind of sucks.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been on there recently, but...
Not recently, no. But...
I go about twice a week.
Oh, strange.
I'm always hoping it's different.
Okay. They're going to have to do a pretty big revamping for that to happen.
I always thought that'd be an awesome 90s cartoon series. You know how Beetlejuice became a cartoon series?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the real Ghostbusters become a cartoon series.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought E.T. would be a really awesome 90s cartoon series, so...
Okay.
But it's kind of too late now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
retroactively make a 90s cartoon series in some form.
Not until time travel is invented.
Like with the cheesy opening and stuff. It was like E.T. and his friends.
Well, actually, speaking of cheesy openings, that was one thing I had written down in my notes is that I really enjoyed about this movie is that it had kind of like a, I mean, it was an animated intro and it kind of looked like Nickelodeon style. From the 90s anime.
Oh, yeah, like Real Monsters and stuff.
Yeah, and like Rocko's Modern Life and Doug, yeah. Even to some degree.
Yeah, so it was very Drop Dead Fred. I like movie. Or Weekend at Bernie's also starts out with an animated credit scene.
Cool. Yeah.
I hope you're using the theme song Earth Girls Are Easy.
If I can find it, I will, yes.
This is definitely going into the library of cinematic soundscapes, like songs featured on the Earth Girls Are soundtrack because
right.
The musical numbers were touch and go, but I did like the one where they were doing the makeover on her.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a catchy tune. I'll give it that much. And then they switched into like a Bonnie Tyler kind of role where she just smashes the place mm-hmm. after Ted leaves.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty awesome too.
And that actually, I had forgotten about that one. I was going to say across the board, I didn't like the musical numbers, but I did like the part when she's smashing all the stuff in the place.
Yeah. And so. She sets up skis leading to the computer that says prenuptial and then rolls a bowling ball down it into the computer. I was like, okay, I guess that's a roundabout way of destroying the computer.
Subtlety.
Yeah. But I think the data is still okay. Just because you destroy the monitor doesn't mean the prenuptial is not there anymore. But...
Actually, I think in 80s computers, the data was actually built into that same device. Like, there was no tower.
Okay. Shows how much I know. Computers are weird.
You've got an Apple II sitting right there next to you, don't you?
Well, I mean, I got the tower, though.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've got the old school one.
It's a retroactive Apple II. All right. Well,
I guess... those really old Apples there that was just the screen, and then you stuck the floppy disk into, like, the screen box.
Yeah.
I do remember those. I used to play Carmen Sandiego on it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, my thoughts are it's really quirky, it's really weird, but it's not unwatchable. I would check it out. And if you dig it, you dig it. I think we'll have some good laughs about it. But if you don't dig it, don't talk to me.
I'm not going to go that far. I would say maybe hold off on this one for a few more years or something. I don't know.
It's the end of the world this year, dude.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Like, there's so many better movies to watch, especially if the end of the world is on the way. So,
top five movies to see before you die. Earth Girls Are Easy. Five stars.
I would say just watch the dance-off sequence in Earth Girls Are Easy, and that's all you need to get out of this movie. Or maybe just, like, the middle, like, 15, 20 minutes or something.
And the Bonnie Tyler song where she wrecks the house.
Sure, yeah. I realize that's not an ideal way to watch a movie, and I'm not actually being serious when I say that. But
watch them out of order, too.
But yeah, no, I honestly, I don't think I can recommend this, even though there are elements to it that I like, because it just, it it rubbed me the wrong way. The whole movie did.
That's okay, Ben. Sometimes we disagree.
It is. You know.
When in Rome.
I like it when we disagree sometimes. It's good. So, all right. As far as the Apple II, we just mentioned the Apple II, even though it's...
Oh, hey. Let me pull that thing out because I think we're ready to pick another movie.
No, you don't actually need to pick it out yet because... What? Because
Ben, say it ain't so.
What?
Say it ain't so, Ben.
Well, I think...
See you later, Apple II. I'm pushing it back into the closet.
Because technically we are still recording this on Monday, April 30th. We're not going to release a new episode like after this one until March 11th. So, or I'm sorry, May.
March 11th?
Sorry,
damn.
I was looking at the wrong month on my calendar. May 13th.
ET show, here we come.
May 13th, sorry. So,
March 11th, 1991. Ben Pearson, Tyler, show up from 2012.
So, I don't know. I just don't think we need to pick it right now. We'll play the mystery box angle 2 weeks in a row,
okay.
And just we'll let people know on Twitter and Facebook this time, like about a week in advance, what we're gonna be checking out. So,
yeah, I'm actually gonna go and announce it today, but it's really 7 days ago.
Okay, there we go. I like it.
We're existing in this weird time where it's actually April 30th, but also like May 6th at the same time.
Yeah, good stuff. Cool. All right. Well, I guess we don't have any new Twitter followers or anything because we literally just recorded this episode one day after.
We actually do have one.
Oh, do we? Okay.
Yeah, LNL, the LNL show. Let me do some research here.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right.
So. If you guys want to shoot us an email, you can do that at notjustinmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. Please do that. Let us know what you think about Earth Girls Are Easy, about the producers, or any of the movies we've talked about in the history of this show. If you want to, you can also subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Please do that as well. You can leave us a review there. That would be fantastic. To do that, you just go to the iTunes store and type in GeekTyrant-NJNM, and then you will find us right there. We had a previous feed that only has episodes 1 through 74 attached to it, but we're in a new feed now. So if you haven't caught up recently, or if this is the first time you're listening, then you can stream all of the episodes at notjustnewmovies.com and geektyrant.com as well, if you want to do that.
And you can download them, so you don't even have to use iTunes. Just
yes.
Get out of that and just come straight to notjustnewmovies.com and go to the download page, and you can click Save As and put it into your music files and then put them on. I think iTunes, you can drag and drop those onto your iPod. You just don't have automatic updates. You just have to come to notjustnewmovies.com every week and check us out.
Yeah, you can do it that way too if you're not a Zune fan or whatever, anything like that. We're looking into some alternate means of distribution and things like that with websites like Stitcher and stuff. So we'll see if any of that actually comes to fruition. But you can also find us, since I'm mentioning this stuff now, just go ahead and say, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/notjustnewmovies and also on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. And Tyler, you did have
the new follower is the Long and Late Movie Show, another fellow movie podcast.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, shout out to those guys.
I'll have to give them
or girls. I don't know who they are.
Yeah.
They come and introduce themselves and maybe bring some oatmeal raisin cookies or something, we'll start up a little dialogue.
You'll start up a little side podcast devoted to talking about other movie podcasts.
I was just about to say. Nice.
All right, so let's go back and forth and tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet. Tyler, let's start with you.
Yes, you can find me at that Twitter handle. I talk that way. I run the Facebook thing.
Yep.
That happens. I try to ask a question every week. So if you like connectivity and Facebook and
respond.
Yeah, definitely respond to our questions of the week. They're not too serious. It's not like, you know, we discuss the answers or anything at length. I might mention if we have any good ones, but they're usually very simple.
Like the Mel Brooks poll you had
last week. Stuff like that. I mean, this week I think the question I'm going to ask is, are Earth Girls really easy? Yes or no? So we'll see where that goes. I hope I don't offend too many people. And the Solar Sentinel, I recently wrote a Swift and Steel. I don't know if you guys like those, but
yep.
It's a Western, so check that out. I think I might have some Avengers comics coming out maybe in the next, no, it would be this week. So check those out too. If I have made those.
Yeah. And this episode is going to come out on, you know, like we said, like May 6th or 7th or something like that. So the Avengers is in theaters now as you're listening to this, and go see it, 'cause it's freaking awesome.
Yeah, Ben, have you written a review for that yet?
I did. You can find it at notjustnewmovie.com. Thank you, Tyler. Appreciate that. You guys can also find me at Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com every day. Same with firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com. That one's not every day, but mostly just reviews and stuff.
Air day.
And that is the namesake for this podcast, and you can hear me occasionally on our Geek Tyrant weekly podcast whenever we get around to doing those. So music for this episode will come courtesy of the Earth Girls Are Easy soundtrack. And yeah, so thanks for being flexible with your schedule there, Tyler. Hopefully everybody
I'm unemployed. I'm good to go.
Listens to this episode and enjoys what they hear. Feel free to shoot us an email with maybe a recommendation of what you think we should watch in the future. If you want to do that, we're always open to suggestions. Maybe you can do a little programming into the Apple II or something like that.
Definitely. We've done that before.
Yep, it's happened. So, and as Tyler mentioned on the previous episode, if you guys leave a comment on any of our podcast episodes at notjustinmovies.com, we also read those on the air as if it was an email or something like that. So if you don't have time to compose a full email or something, then just leave us a comment. That's totally cool, too. Anything that
we love the community. We love talking about movies with other people. Like, yes. Don't think we're high and mighty about things. Like, our opinions are... they are, but we also like to humor ourselves with other people's opinions.
Right.
I think is what I'm trying to say.
That is, and yeah.
Yes. Just kidding. But we want a community of listeners who also love movies and like to talk about movies as much as we do.
Yeah, and also, since we're talking about a community, I'm going to reach out to our current community and just say, I'm not going to talk
not
about
not as good as happy endings, Ben.
I'm not going to talk about the TV show community, which I also love. I'm legitimately making a plea here. If you guys listen to the show, if you've been listening for a long time, spread the word, help us out. We're trying to expand our listenership, and because of this whole catastrophe we've had with the different feeds and stuff recently, it's been really tough for us to kind of keep a lot of listeners because people haven't been following along and don't really realize that we're on a new thing now. So anyway, do what you can. If you like the show, spread the word, post us on Facebook, all that stuff. Let your friends know, and we would greatly appreciate it. So thanks for listening, everybody. What's that?
More importantly, we're trying to get Gina Davis on.
Yeah, and we can only do that if we have a certain number of listeners, which I don't know if that's true or not, but let's pretend it is. So if you want to hear Gina Davis on, then your best option for doing that is to tell everyone you know and their parents about us. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.
Later.